Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Thomas John Trigo for Petitioner Wang. This case was denied based on several inconsistencies as well as lack of cooperation. On page 36, third paragraph, the IJ states petitioner testified she was introduced to Christianity because she failed to be admitted to a university in China. As well on cross-exam on page 117, lines 25, and page 118, line 1. This is inconsistent with her declaration, I was not admitted to a good university. This is on page 121, and lines 3 to 7. Under SESTRA, 590 Fed 3rd, 1034 at 1041, and 1042, 9th Circuit, 2010, relevant circumstances that the IJ should consider include petitioner's explanation for perceived inconsistencies and other record evidence that sheds light that there is, in fact, an inconsistency. To ignore the petitioner's explanation for perceived inconsistency would be to make credibility determination on less than what would be the totality of the circumstances and contravenes the Real ID Act. The petitioner was never given an opportunity to address this inconsistency by the immigration judge. Moreover, on page 117, line 25, and page 118, line 1, petitioner testifies she couldn't get into a university in China. Is consistent with her written statement on page 187, the last paragraph. I was not admitted by my preferred college. Additionally, on page 121, lines 6 and 7, her testimony, she was not admitted to a good university, was a question posed by the government attorney.
Well, you know, that one, that inconsistency was not a ground relied upon by the BIA. The BIA relied on three grounds, if I'm reading the record correctly: the implausibility and inconsistency in her testimony regarding her mother paying for her arrangements, the inconsistency and implausibility in her testimony regarding why she obtained a passport, and her failure to corroborate her testimony with respect to her religious practice. So I'm not sure that we need to care much about the university point.
Okay. So going to based on her financial issues.
Counsel, your volume went down dramatically.
Let me see what we can do. Is that better?
Closer.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that better? Okay. So in looking at how the inconsistency was about her financial stability and whether her mom could pay, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. And that second inconsistency is on page 36, the last paragraph. You know, petitioner declares that her family was so desperate she had to work hard labor on a farm to support her mom and her younger brother. Yet, respondent testified that in July 2011, she acquired a passport in the off chance that she would go internationally sightseeing. She testified that her mother paid the agent to provide her with a visa and transportation to the United States. Yet, in her affidavit, her family is so poor they depend on petitioner to support the families financially. In this case, on page 187, second paragraph of the record, petitioner never states that her family was so poor that she had to depend on the petitioner to support the family. In fact, on page 187, second paragraph, actually, petitioner's affidavit states, due to the fact of her mom's poor health, she started doing heavy farm work. Her mom's poor health was caused by her overwhelming sorrow for the loss of her father. She became weaker because she missed her husband. Finally, during this time, my mother, my little brother, and I depended on each other. Thus, if the judge would have considered these facts, that the petitioner and the family were there to support each other during this time of grief, and not due to the fact of being poor, the petitioner is consistent, and this would not support the finding that the IJ and her mom could not afford her visa and transportation to the United States, as well as...
That was also, I think, some years earlier, like 9 or 10 years before, that she was doing this.
Right. Well, she was actually, her father passed, Your Honor, when she was 12 years old.
So that's what I'm saying.
Right. And why didn't the judge consider that actual factor, that her father had passed? On page 231, the death certificate. It's on page 231.
Yeah, could you move on to the next one? That is to say, implausibility as to why she obtained her passport.
Well, I mean, where's the relevancy? She said she, in the off chance she was going to go sightseeing. If you look in her passport, there's no stamps in her passport that she went to go sightseeing. So it actually is consistent with the fact that she stayed home, was supporting the family. I mean, so where's the implausibility?
So here's where I'm, because time is short, I'll cut to the chase for me. Now, the three of us have not conferred on this, so at the moment I'm questioning and speaking only for myself. It strikes me that the first two grounds by the BIA, the ones we've just gone over, support of is the mother too poor and why she got her passport, those are pretty weak grounds for finding her incredible. The last one, however, troubles me. She was first going to use as her testimony, as her evidence as to why supports the fact that she's a Christian, a minister in the United States. And when the IJ says, you know, that guy testifies for a lot of people and I don't really trust him, I suggest you get somebody else. She doesn't get anybody else.
And then
the IJ says, you know, I don't believe this Christianity conversion because you didn't present any evidence. You didn't present a new person from the church. And then he says, and you didn't provide any other evidence, for example, from your mother about this or any evidence from China. My problem is, I'm wondering, and this is a question partly in your favor, but partly not, under our decision in Wren, if the IJ says, I need corroboration in order to believe you, the IJ is supposed to give her a chance to provide it.
Correct, John.
And that's interesting. But here's my problem with that. He says that, but he also says, but the fact that you could have provided somebody from the church and you didn't, and I warned you, she had notice of that.
Agreed. And here's the interesting thing. If you look at page 141, this is the linchpin. The linchpin where she says she gives her notice. So on the first court date, this for the trial, she says, well, I've seen this person testify. His Mandarin is unintelligible. You can't understand him. He's testified in four or five other cases with different letterheads. So I'm going to give you a chance to get another witness. Well, she writes this down on page 141. She wants just the actual State Department reports and a new witness. Day of the hearing, she comes in. She had a new witness. However, the reason why she had to get two other witnesses, one had passed, and it was in the record that the person had passed, one had died. And then she got another one, but unfortunately, that person went to China for the Spring Festival, that pastor. And so that's why they're unavailable. So under Wren, it says if you don't provide the corroboration, you have to have a reasonable explanation why it's not available. Well, one person died. The other one is in China. So, and then on top of it, there's case law under Wren, which is Marcos V. Gonzalez, 410 Fed 3rd, 1112 at 1118, 2005, Ninth Circuit, that says we previously observed demanding cooperation immediately on the day of the hearing would raise serious due process concerns by depriving an applicant of his guaranteed or reasonable opportunity to present evidence on his behalf. So the last things that she requested, all those other things other than the State Department and the witness, she did on the day of the hearing. Which, how would the client be afforded that fair opportunity when she could have put that same amount of documentation she wanted on that 2 years earlier on page 141?
I realize we're about to take you over time, but we'll make sure you get a chance to respond. What if the IJ, what if she had said, I mistakenly referred to the IJ as a man, but it's a woman, it's Darcy. What if she had said or written only, well, I told you to get somebody else. You're now telling me that two other witnesses, possible witnesses, one died and one is in China, but that there must be somebody else in church. I mean, the long and the short of it is you didn't provide a witness.
I see that point, but here's, not everybody is the pastor of the church, so you don't have that many availability to.
Well, how about somebody? I'm now just putting my imagining a conversation, and I'm putting myself in the shoes of the IJ. Well, there must be other people in the congregation who witnessed you coming to church. I mean, this is not where you're in sort of doing this in isolation. I mean, maybe there's no pastor, but there may be somebody else who's capable of testifying to this.
That here's the interesting thing about that. A lot of times in courts, the judge and the government attorney prefer the pastor because they're the person who baptized the individual and actually asked them, do you really believe this person is a Christian? The common lay person who goes to attend to church can't verify that.
Counsel, that's not true. We often get fellow congregants who come in and say, I've seen them at the services every week, and they're faithful in their attendance. And so it's not just the pastor who attests to the faithfulness of the non-citizen.
Right, but the other thing about this, there were several other documents submitted in this case pertaining to those churches, and in order to actually have those admitted, which they were taken out of the record, because there was nobody from those churches who wrote those letters to actually authenticate them. So a layperson could not have done that. That's why we were looking for the pastors as well. You know, all the other documentation would have came in, the baptism certificates, the letters from the pastor, those were all excluded because the pastors were not available. So then other evidence would be not used. So that's why we were looking for specific witnesses in this case. You know, and then, so then no evidence came in pertaining to her history in attending churches.
Okay. If there are no further questions from the bench for the moment, let's hear from the government, and then we'll give you a chance to respond.
Yes, Ron.
Mr. Holt.
May it please the court, John Holt for the Attorney General. Before the court is an adverse credibility decision by the agency, and the issue is whether a reasonable adjudicator will be compelled to conclude contrary to the agency. We submit you should deny the petitioner review because petitioner admitted that she lied, she provided inconsistent testimony, implausible testimony, and failed to corroborate her claim.
Tell me the admission that she lied.
She admitted that she lied regarding her passport, that she had no intention of attending university in the United States.
Well, no, she lied to whom then? She lied to the IJ, or she lied to somebody else?
The consulate officer, regarding getting her passport and regarding her coming to the United States. She said, I lied. On page 135 and 119 of the record, she admits that she lied to the consulate officer regarding her intention to come to university.
Yes. Depending on who she lies to, that makes a big difference because we get an awful lot of people coming into this country who lie in order to get here. That's just part of the game. That's just how they get here. And we don't hold that against them. Now, if she'd lied to the court, that's an entirely different matter.
But, Your Honor, it was not who she lied to, but what she lied about that was absolutely critical. What she lied about is she lied about her intention to pursue her education. And this really goes to probably the most important part of this claim. As a matter of fact, at page 50 of the administrative record, the immigration judge focused on the foundation of petitioner's claim. And the foundation of her claim was, this is a claim of religious persecution, and as petitioner's counsel just now admitted, what triggered her religious experience was the pain of her allegedly being rejected from a Chinese university. Why is that relevant? Certainly it's human experience, that spiritual enlightenment or awareness or experience can arise for pain and crisis.
You know, this is interesting, and it's possibly a ground, but it's not a ground relied upon by the BIA.
It is, Your Honor. Finding number 3 of the board on page 4 specifically states the immigration judge's finding regarding the passport. And if you look at pages 150 and one, page 49 and 50, you see that the immigration judge focused on this matter in terms of petitioners.
I'm not talking about what the IJ did. We need to rely on what the BIA found in terms of grounds for finding the incredible. And the BIA did not do that.
But Your Honor, in finding number three, the BIA did.
So where are you? Okay, where are you with the BIA? I'll follow along with you.
On page four of the record, the BIA specifically says the inconsistency and implausibility of her testimony regarding why she obtained a passport in 2011. And if you go to page 122 and 123, the immigration judge noted that one reason why she obtained the passport was because, quote, she was not admitted to a good university. Why is that important? Because she claimed that she had a spiritual experience because of her despondency and discouragement from being rejected from university. And so the immigration judge said, let's look at this very carefully. What triggered your spiritual experience? In other words, what happened? Why did you become a Christian? She said, I was despondent because I was rejected from university. The immigration judge noted then on page 49 of his findings specifically, and I read, respondent testified she had no intention of attending Valparaiso University in the United States and admitted providing false information to the consulate officials when interviewed. That relates to her passport. So the immigration judge was saying, wait just a minute. The reason why you had a spiritual experience was because you were disappointed with the lack of an educational opportunity in China. But yet when you were trying to get in the United States, you lied about your desire to come to the United States and avail yourself of an educational opportunity. Let's step back for just a moment. Let's assume that the record was a bit different. Let's assume, again, perhaps the crisis that triggered her spiritual experience was a health crisis or a relationship that failed. In that case, it would be entirely irrelevant that she told the counselor officer that she came to the United States. She lied to the counselor officer regarding a desire to attend university. But where the essence of her spiritual experience relates to educational opportunity.
And you know, I'm having trouble following your argument with respect to what the IJ wrote. I've got the IJ's opinion here in front of me, and yes, he does say that I don't believe you with respect to what you said to the consulate, but I'm having trouble relating that to his disbelief as to the Christianity.
Go to the top of the next page, on page 50, Your Honor, and specifically, and I quote, respondent's logic or foundation for her depression and emotional upheaval in China as a basis for her attending house church in China in the first instance just does not add up and is inconsistent.
And inconsistent with what?
Well, it's inconsistent in the fact that she said, I was disappointed and had a spiritual experience because I didn't have an opportunity to pursue my education. Yet, but when she came to the United States, as the immigration judge pointed out on page 49, she lied to the counselor officer about her even intention to pursue education. And the immigration judge right at the bottom of page 49 also asserts that it's inconsistent and implausible in the sense that petitioner asserts that she admits that she has poor grades. And so how could she anticipate getting in a quality university? At page 135 of the record, petitioner specifically admits that she had poor grades. So there were two factors. First of all, her lie. And then secondly, the evidence that established she was not a qualified student. And what that goes to, Your Honor, is on page four of the board decision, factor three, the circumstances regarding her testimony seeking a passport to the United States. It's tied together. And putting a case together, doesn't every algorithm say follow the pain? Where is the pain in the case? And the immigration judge, to his credit, said, you assert you had a spiritual experience. What was the trigger for that spiritual experience? Petitioner said, I couldn't pursue my educational opportunity. So again, the immigration judge said, well, you know, that's curious. And it really undermines that assertion that you lied regarding your desire to come to the United States to seek an educational opportunity. And then secondly, the grade.
Let me respond to that. She says, and I don't think this is questioned, she doesn't get into the good university in China because her grades are no good. Well, she then lies and says, I'm going to the United States to get an education. That is a lie to the consular. But she also doesn't have good enough grades to get into Valparaiso either. So that doesn't mean that that wasn't the trigger for her Christianity, but that does mean she's lying that she's coming to the university, to the United States, to get an education.
Well, the important point the immigration judge pointed out is that it undermined her credibility, that she suffered despondency and disappointment and it triggered a spiritual experience because she didn't get in a top university when indeed she admits on page 135 of the record that she didn't have good grades.
Well, no, that's why she didn't get in. That's why she's despondent.
But the point is that explains the assertion that she didn't have a valid, it's inconsistent with her assertion that she was coming, had no intention to come to the United States to pursue her education.
Well, no, I don't see that as inconsistent at all. She's trying to get to the United States because, well, this is her story. Her story is, I had poor grades. I couldn't get into a good university in China. I was persecuted because I attended a house church. And I came to the United States to avoid the persecution. I lied to get to the United States by saying I came to get an education, but that's the only was my mechanism to get to the United States to escape the religious persecution. I understand your arguments, and I'm not entirely discounting them, but I want to ask another question before we get to the end. Assume, I don't ask you to concede, assume for a moment that the first two reasons given by the Board of Ed, by the BIA, are not enough, that I don't find them supported. The third one is, listen, I just don't believe that you are a Christian because there's nothing here. And I asked you to get me a witness and you didn't provide one. And in addition, you don't provide other information that would corroborate. So we got a Wren problem there. Assuming that the first two grounds are not valid, I don't ask you to concede, assume, is the fact that the IJ is, that she's asked for corroboration on the third fatal and we have to send it back under Wren?
No, first of all, Your Honor, Wren is inapplicable here because the immigration judge found petitioner incredible. The notice requirement of Wren is implicated only where the immigration judge finds a petitioner credible and then otherwise demands corroborative evidence. So the first point as a matter of law is Wren is inapplicable here. Secondly, is that this is a case where there was repeated notice over 2 years to petitioner regarding any corroboration that may support her claim. First of all, I would say that all the corroboration that petitioner has argued relate to factors that were not at the heart of the agency decision, and that is regarding her lie and her desire to pursue her education. There's nothing offered in that regard, and there's no corroborative evidence relating to the family circumstances and the implausibility of petitioner working for years to support the family and then her mother suddenly having a windfall after years to be able to fund her trip to the United States. So those two pivotal factors, the corroboration doesn't even relate to. Finally, with regard to her faith, petitioner was given notice. In our brief, we cite the litany of pages of over 2 years where the immigration judge advised petitioner of the corroboration required, gave her an order to produce it, gave her an opportunity to explain it, and we submit that there was sufficient opportunity for petitioner to present corroboration, but she failed to do so. The corroboration requirement is not dispositive. The most important thing is what we led from the first. Petitioner lied regarding her desire and intention to pursue university at the United States, which was at the heart, her educational concern was at the heart of her spiritual crisis. The immigration on page 49 and 50 articulate those concerns And he says that factor alone establishes that petitioner was incredible. So counsel, incredible in part. Yes.
May I ask you if the two findings that Judge Fletcher referenced are not enough in and of themselves, with the failure to corroborate under the totality of circumstances, would that be enough to constitute substantial evidence to support the adverse credibility determination?
Absolutely. Dye establishes and supports that proposition. We would say, we would ask the court to focus on the third factor, the circumstances surrounding her obtaining the visa and her lie regarding that. And then the corroboration is just an add-on. But the immigration judge made it clear at the top of page 50 that her lying about the foundational requirement of the basis of her spiritual experience undermined her credibility in part, and he completely discounted it. And the board adopted that, as I indicated on page 4, finding number 3. So okay. We submit that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah, any further questions from the bench? Thank you. Well, we took both of you over. Let's put 2 minutes on the clock for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, to address the issue of corroboration, once the actual client showed up without the actual witness on the day on February 13, 2018, under Wren, the judge was supposed to give the respondent or the petitioner in this case an opportunity to explain why the evidence, corroborating evidence, wasn't available. Well, she has a plausible explanation. One witness dies and the other one is just unavailable. The documentation that supports her being a Christian all comes from the church. That's why they were looking for the pastor to come testify.
Counsel?
Yes.
What language in Wren are you relying upon to support the proposition that once notice has been given and the petitioner shows up without the requested documents, there has to be another opportunity to explain why those documents are not presented? Tell me the precise language in Wren yes. that supports that.
Yes, in Wren it says if it's unavailable, you're supposed to, if it's not provided, you have to give an opportunity for the respondent or applicant to explain why, a reasonable explanation why it's unavailable.
But does that explanation have to be accepted?
Well, that's where your court and the judge has to look and say, hey, is this a reasonable and plausible explanation? Well, we can't say somebody dying is unreasonable and that's why they're unavailable.
Whether or not there are other people that are available, that's the problem I have with your argument, is that there was not a limited universe of people who could have been produced.
Understandably so, but here's the supporting documentation of her membership in the church. The only person then who could have testified that she was a member in that church is somebody who's actually part of a pastor or somebody who owns the church. So it can't just be a lay person who goes to church with her.
Why not? Why can't you have a person who goes to church with her say, I see her at church on Sunday, she's active in this ministry, she's active in this activity, and her beliefs appear to be genuine to me. We have cases like that all the time.
I understand what you're saying, but the judge actually excluded all the evidence based on the fact that the witness from the church was going to support the documents that were in the record.
Separate and apart from the documents.
Right. So again, you know, I can't explain what another attorney was thinking or doing, but at this point, you have to, you know, look at, well, if she did try, not once, but twice, she did bring an actual witness in the first time, which the judge said, well, I don't accept this person because they testified in other cases.
But when you say another attorney, I think it was somebody from your office that represented her.
Right.
And don't lay that off on some other attorney that you don't know anything about.
No. I'm not saying I'm laying it off, but each attorney's approach to a case is their right, and I don't try to intervene.
Well, but you're stuck with what the attorney in this case decided. So
correct. Right. But at the same time, she did provide a witness that the judge said, hey, I don't like this witness. So we were trying to accommodate the judge. And the basis for her not liking, because he's testified in other cases, 4 or 5 other cases, and that his Mandarin is unintelligible. That's not fair either. I mean, we did provide a witness. Why is the judge then excluding a witness without any evidence in the record saying why he's not a valid witness?
Counsel, I'm on page 1090 on the Wren case. And there we said, an IJ must provide an applicant with notice and an opportunity to either produce the evidence or explain why it is unavailable before ruling. So if the IJ has given the notice and given the opportunity to explain why it's unavailable, then the IJ may rule at that point. Would you agree?
Agree, but she actually made the ruling before. She said, I'm using this as a negative factor. She didn't say, hey, or explain, well, you know what? That makes sense. Someone dies, okay, and another one's in another country.
But Wren doesn't say that. Wren doesn't say she has to respond to the reason that was given. Wren says an notice has to be given and an opportunity to explain if it's unavailable, then the IJ may rule. Doesn't impose a requirement that the IJ go back and forth regarding the reason that was given.
Agreed, Your Honor, but here's the bottom line. The client shows up without it, says, you know what? I find this to be a negative factor. I told you 2 years ago, you need to have somebody here. So she was already predisposed. She says that on the record. This is a negative factor without even considering her reasonable explanation of why the witness is unavailable due to death and one's in a foreign country. So where's the fairness in that? In the record, she says it. This is a negative factor. I told you 2 years ago, and I gave you notice on page 141. So...
Okay, you're over time. Any further questions from the bench or follow-up from Judge Rawlinson? And Judge Rawlinson,
I'm sorry, Judge Fletcher, but I just wanted to follow up on the sequence of events. So could you take us to the record where you say the IJ made the ruling before the explanation was given?
Yes, give me 1 second. I have it. It's around page 85, Your Honor. Give me 1 second. I want to go there.
Okay. I want to go there with you because that's a very important point.
Right. I agree with you.
So on page 85, it says, starting at line 10, now, where is your church witness? They're not here today, Judge, because of the Chinese New Year, the pastor for church is in China. So that's the explanation, no ruling yet.
Right.
Then the judge says, no excuse. There is no excuse. You don't have your witness. I reset your case 2 years ago. So the explanation was given before the judge said, no excuse.
But she doesn't even consider it in deciding. It says on page 87, it's now a negative factor in her case. She has not provided corroboration of her membership in the church in this country.
Right, but that was after she listened to the explanation. So your argument that the judge made the ruling before listening to the explanation in violation of Wren is not supported by the record.
Well, it's supported in the sense that she doesn't even consider it. She dismisses it. So where's the fairness?
But what do you mean she doesn't consider it? I mean, she hears it, she rejects it.
In the sense that, and this is why I'm saying this, in the sense that, you know, where does she say, okay, I'm sorry, one of your pastors or witnesses had died and the other one's in China. And then she goes through, when did you learn all of this? And it was 7 months earlier she learned that one of them died. Then she had to go and get another witness who then, it was never established in the record, when did she find out when they're not available?
Doesn't matter. She considered the fact that the evidence wasn't presented And that's all Wren requires.
I agree. And this is only if the court, her court, and this judge decided she was credible and then denied it on corroboration. But that wasn't the case. The case was decided based on her lack of credibility. So to even get to this issue of corroboration, the judge had to first make her credible.
I don't have any other questions. Thank you, Judge Fletcher.
Okay. Thank both sides for your argument. Wang versus Garland now submitted for decision.
Thank you.